you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
And welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I apologize up front because any listeners are going to be hearing about this for the next couple of months. We're going to Paris.
It's true.
If you want to get in on that trip, because listeners can come with us, you just go to our website. There is an option in the menu bar at the top of the page that says Paris trip exclamation point because of excitement. And then that will give you all the details on booking. Because we are going on this Paris trip in June, I have a little bit of the rabies about France topics. You're getting a two-parter on a French topic this week because I'm very excited. And it involves a thing we will visit, at least I will visit for sure when we are there. Literally everyone has heard of what we call in the U.S. the Eiffel Tower. It's actually Eiffel, but that's a whole other thing. That one structure itself and its construction could easily be the subject of multiple episodes because there's a whole fascinating story, particularly from the engineering and building standpoint there. But the engineer it is named for, Gustave Eiffel, contributed a great deal more to the world than that one iconic structure. So we will talk about the building of the Tour Eiffel, but we won't cover it in complete exhaustive detail. And Gustave Eiffel's early life actually showed no indication that he was going to end up famous for his engineering work. And his later life actually went in a totally different direction. And his expertise in ironwork was sought for projects throughout Europe and South America. He also worked on one of the most iconic structures in the United States as well. And his career is interesting to me because it's mostly an impressive series of successes, except for one colossal scandal. Like, I feel like often when we talk about somebody who has become iconic historically, it's like we're revealing all of the struggle and all of the mistakes they made along the way. And in this case, it's kind of like, yep, he did that and it was on time and under budget. And also that other one was on time and under budget. And also this one was on time and under budget because he was very exacting. So this is a little bit different than the I messed up a lot and then I made a great thing. It's more like I made a lot of great stuff. People just only remember one.
I was very competent.
Yes, I was extraordinarily good at what I did. And we will talk about some criticisms of him as well. But in the first part of this two-parter, we're going to talk about his early family life and how he eventually found himself working with what were very modern materials for the time. He kind of stumbled into it. And then in the second part, which will be the next episode, we will delve into some of his most famous projects, as well as the surprising turn that his efforts took in his later years.
Alexandre Gustave Eiffel was born December 15, 1832. His family was originally from Germany. His great-great-grandfather had moved to Paris in the early 1700s, and the family trade was tapestry weaving up until Alexandre Bernhausen Eiffel, who was Gustave's father, went into military service instead of becoming a weaver. The elder Alexandre married Gustave's mother, Catherine Melanie Meuse, in the fall of 1824 while he was stationed in Dijon. That's roughly 200 miles southeast of Paris. Gustave had two sisters born after him. There were Marie, who was born in 1834, and Laure, born in 1836.
And Catherine was not a woman who married and had kids and then stayed home to raise them. She was a little unique for her time. She was actually an entrepreneur with a very astute business instinct. And not long after she became a mother, she decided that she would take her family's business, which was charcoal, and expand it. And she arranged for her company to become the distributor of coal from more mines throughout France than they already had, in order to capitalize on the growing need for coal in industry.
So both parents had very busy careers, but the family was very close. Gustave and his mother especially were close, but Catherine and Alexandre also prioritized their children, all of their children, and offered them an example of a dedicated work ethic and a marriage of equals. When Catherine's coal business started to grow really quickly, Alexandre left his civil administrator job to go work with her. And together they built a pretty nice fortune for the family. Eventually, they moved into a brewery business, and they kept doing well there. But they were also seen as outsiders in high society. That was really dominated by old money families who had been wealthy for generations. So their new money just didn't have the same shine to it.
Yeah, they did not have clout in high society circles. And they weren't actually running that brewery. They had just made a big investment in it after they sold their coal company. I should also mention that you'll often see that Gustave and his sisters were raised largely by their grandmother on his mother's side, which they did stay with her the majority of the time. But both Catherine and Alexandre made a point to always go home and spend time with their children and be with them as much as they could. Gustave also became close with his chemist uncle, Jean-Baptiste Molerat, who ran a large distillery. And Molerat's friend, Michel Perret, also an industrial chemist who made a name for himself in mineral mining. And these two men were pretty highly influential in the development of Eiffel's worldview. Both believed basically in questioning everything. His uncle was particularly anti-royalist. And both thought that you should question things both philosophically and scientifically.
Gustave found school to be really challenging. It was boring at best and excruciating at worst, but two of his teachers really ignited a love of learning for him when he got to be a teenager. He had a literature teacher named Monsieur Clemenceau and a history teacher named Monsieur Desjardins, and their entry into his education really inspired him to continue it. They helped him get caught up on his work, which he had fallen behind on by being disengaged.
Yeah, I saw one estimate that he was like a year behind his peers because he had just stopped bothering.
Yeah. They also helped him gain admission into the Collège Sainte-Barbe in Paris, which they hoped would lead him to getting entry into École Polytechnique to finish up his education.
And the young Eiffel had traveled to Paris from Dijon for the first time when he was 12. And during that trip, which he took with his mother, he really fell in love with the city. But even though he had seemed entirely excited as a slightly older young man to attend school there, he pretty quickly became homesick after he started at Collège Sainte-Barbe. He eventually found amusements in seeking out opportunities, for example, to dance with young ladies. He made a note that he preferred dancing with English girls rather than French girls because he found them less reserved. And he also would attend the occasional séance. So he wasn't really focusing on his studies. He didn't get really passionate about his education. He kind of sat right in the middle of his class achievement-wise.
After his second year, his performance on his exams hadn't been good enough to get him entry into École Polytechnique. So instead, he went to École Centrale. He didn't seem very dismayed by this change in plans, and the need to go to a less prestigious school didn't seem to faze him all that much. He wasn't focused on engineering or metallurgy in his studies. Those are things that you might expect of the man who had become known for building these massive iron structures. When it came time to select a concentration, he went into chemistry, probably thinking he might eventually take over his uncle's business. Although, due to a politically generated falling out in the family, that never really happened.
No. As I said, his uncle was very outspoken and liked to question everything, and that caused some problems with other members of the family. Gustave graduated from École Centrale in 1855, and while he had focused on chemistry and actually had really done pretty well in those studies for a change, he also had a pretty well-rounded education. 1855 was also the year that Eiffel asked his mother for a season pass to the Exposition Universelle in Paris. London's Great Exhibition of 1851, which has come up on this podcast a number of times before, including Joseph Paxton's Crystal Palace, had been a massive success, and the French were eager to outdo it, in part because they felt that they had invented the idea of having these sort of world's fairs, and that the British had stolen the concept from them and then acted as though it was their own. But in any case, Paris in 1855 was alive with this desire to show off the best and the brightest in the newly constructed Palais de l'Industrie on the Champs-Élysées.
In fact, the Exposition Universelle had really carved out a different space from the London Expo in terms of national identity and areas of expertise. So as the animosity waned and Britain and France started building a more cordial relationship, which was cemented by Queen Victoria's visit to the Parisian Expo, the French started focusing more on showcasing their taste for design and art instead of making a real run at trying to shame Britain's more industrial and manufacturing-focused show that had happened 4 years prior. And Gustave Eiffel was on hand to see and explore all of this.
And while that experience must have been enthralling and very exciting, young Gustave eventually had to figure out a career path, and we will get to that right after we first pause for a little sponsor break.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Since the plan to take over his uncle's distillery was no longer in place by the time he graduated from school, Eiffel took a foundry apprenticeship with his brother-in-law, Joseph Collin. And this was not a paying position, so while Eiffel used the opportunity to learn as much as he could about iron founding, he also started looking for a permanent job with an income immediately.
The next year, 1856, Eiffel visited the offices and workshop of Charles Neveu in the 8th arrondissement as one of a series of visits that he made to inquire after work. This was a pretty fortuitous visit because Neveu was already at the forefront of the railway industry. He designed both tracks and engines, and he offered Gustave Eiffel a job. Eiffel would work as the private secretary and would get an on-the-job education in engineering and materials science while he was at it. At the same time, Eiffel took economics classes through a Sunday program at École des Mines.
Yeah, the École des Mines was basically letting him have a private tutorship and getting full course credit for it so that he could continue his work. And it is kind of funny to me. This is sort of that case of somebody just stumbling into what ends up being the thing that defines them, because he was visiting a lot of different offices and places along the way when he happened to meet with Neveu and just kind of struck his moment. But this all seems ideal, but Neveu was in some serious financial trouble after a really expensive project that he had been working on had gone completely awry. And one day, Neveu just didn't show up at the office, and for 2 weeks he was missing, and the business's bills and management went completely unattended. And Eiffel was actually afraid that his new boss had killed himself. There were some clues that Eiffel had put together and really feared for this man's life, but in reality, he seems to have had a nervous breakdown. And after he returned to work, Gustave actually stayed with Neveu to help him close up the business, even though he knew he was not going to get paid for these efforts because, as we said, deep financial trouble. But Neveu did find Eiffel a new job at La Compagnie des Chemins de Fer de l'Ouest. That's the Western Railway Company. And this was not the end of his relationship, though, with Neveu.
Gustave earned 125 francs a month in his new position and worked with the chief engineer as the company kept expanding its considerable railway holdings. That chief engineer was Eugène Fléchat, who was an innovator in the use of sheet metal ironwork. At this point, iron as an architectural material was still pretty new in France, and Fléchat had been a significant contributor in the slow acceptance in France. England was a bit ahead of France in incorporating iron into construction and had been experimenting with it all the way back in the 1700s.
Yeah, some of that was economic. Like, it was just expensive to start experimenting with this new material, and France did not have the money or interest in spending the money to do that. And also some of it was aesthetic. They weren't really ready to adopt this new thing yet. That will come up in part two as well. But with the railway, Eiffel designed his first structure. It was a bridge, 72 feet, that's just short of 22 meters, that would be constructed with cast iron and sheet iron. And this design was approved for construction for the Saint-Germain Railway.
At the same time, Neveu was working to sell off his company, which he had never really been good at running. He wanted to sell it to a larger firm that would pay him to continue to do engineering and design work without having to worry about all the administrative tasks that he just couldn't get a handle on trying to run his own business. He sold to a Belgian company and not only got the position he wanted, but also arranged for Gustave Eiffel to be given a senior position in the French office as head of research, which paid 250 francs a month.
Yeah, that was a big jump for him. That doubled his income. He went from being like an entry-level employee to a senior employee at a different company. It was a nice way of saying, thank you for sticking with me in that whole messy business a while back. And with the new Belgian company, Nepveu secured a high-profile project. This is a bridge over the Garonne River at Bordeaux that would link two previously separated rail systems. And Charles Nepveu entrusted Eiffel with the metal assembly. He ran the entire side of that operation. And this was no small ask because the project was huge and it had only a 24-month window for completion.
The project didn't just involve the iron bridge. Before the construction could even start, Eiffel had to set up workshops and a temporary service bridge at the site so that the ironwork could be assembled there before it was installed. But Eiffel managed all of this and the bridge work itself very efficiently. He used hydraulic pile driving, which is a really new technique, to drive hollow caissons into the riverbed that could serve as workspaces during construction.
And as a side note, caisson disease, decompression sickness characterized by the formation of gas bubbles in the body when a person moves quickly from a high-pressure environment to a lower-pressure environment, is in fact named for this construction technique because these caissons would be pressurized so that people could work in them underwater, and then they would go back to regular topside without really any transition time. But there is no record of any such illness happening on Eiffel's Bordeaux Bridge project. The only injury on record took place when a riveter fell into the river during construction. And Gustave Eiffel jumped into the water to rescue the worker, and then he instituted a series of new safety measures immediately after the whole thing was done, including the men always had to be tethered with a rope if they were riveting up on the bridge. And it should be noted, though, that the laborer who fell was actually believed to have been intoxicated at the time of the accident. So while, of course, they needed all of these safety measures, he was not being safe on the job to begin with.
Part of the reason that Eiffel was so efficient was that he was very precise in his design and calculations. While other engineers were developing designs through trial and error, he was doing really meticulous math before the project started to make sure that his ideas were structurally sound. This bridge was a success, and it led to Eiffel's promotion in 1860 to engineer general. He was given a salary of 9,000 francs a year, plus a 5% share of the profits on any of his projects. He could also not be dismissed with less than a year's notice.
Yeah, that's a sweet deal. And at this point, Gustave Eiffel was successful. He was stable, and he was in his late 20s. And what he really, really wanted was a family of his own. And he had dated a number of women, and he even tried to become engaged to one of the young ladies that he had dated, but her family did not think he was of high enough social standing. That's kind of his, what we talked about a moment ago, with his parents being very successful but never quite being accepted by the wealthy or high society, kind of coming back to bite him.
But he reunited with a young woman from his hometown of Dijon that he had known since childhood, and there he finally found his match. Gustave married Marie Godelet on July 8, 1862. Marie, who went by Marguerite, was the granddaughter of one of the Eiffel family business partners, so blending the two families was a pretty natural fit. The two of them went on to have five children. The first was a daughter named Claire, who was born in 1863, which was the year after their wedding.
Yeah, she, one thing that I read suggested that she had just started going by Marguerite to make things easier since his mother was a Marie, and so they would be easy to differentiate when people were speaking about them. And this marriage was a happy one. But unfortunately, a series of problems unfolded in Eiffel's life soon after the wedding. While he had been promoted again by the company, it quickly became apparent that there were some serious problems with finances and the business was not stable anymore. And he knew he had to get out. And so after putting together a few independent projects and some consulting contracts, he decided he would just set out on his own and go into business for himself.
At the same time, he and his new bride took on the full-time care of Gustave's sister, Laure, who had some serious health problems. She died in the summer of 1864, and Gustave, who really doted on both of his sisters, grieved very deeply. So he was in the midst of personal and professional upheaval as he and Marguerite were starting their family.
Fortunately, that move, though, to work for himself proved to be a really good one. In the spring of the following year, Afel traveled to Egypt as part of a lucrative government contract he had gotten in which he was managing the manufacture of a large order of locomotives, like several dozen engines. While touring northern Africa, he visited the Suez Canal construction site, and he made the acquaintance of Ferdinand de Lesseps, whose company was building it. De Lesseps and Gustave's business relationship with him would later be the cause of a great deal of trouble for Afel, but that is going to come up in the second part of this episode.
When the French government decided to host another expo in 1867, Gustave Eiffel hoped to be involved in construction of the main hall. But while he had been working on a lot of projects, he didn't have a workshop of his own, so there wasn't any way that he could capture a big contract for this exhibition. Instead, he served as an assistant to Jean-Baptiste Krantz, who was the director of works, and designed, among other things, the arch girders for one of the galleries, which established the mathematical design rules of all wrought iron construction going forward.
Yeah, he was working really constantly on a lot of projects. And as we had said, he was very, very careful and meticulous with his math. And he really set down a lot of the rules that builders used going forward from that point. And while his work on the exhibition was productive, even before the show opened, Gustave had begun looking for a place to set up his own ironworks so that he would not lose out on future opportunities. In late 1866, he had secured a location in northern Paris to do just that, and he began advertising his availability to design and build projects from boilers to reservoirs.
We will talk about his early days offering full engineering and construction services in just a moment, but we're going to pause before we do and have a sponsor break. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. and keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. It was not an easy run for Gustav Eiffel getting his business off the ground. While he did get a fair amount of work, it was all relatively small contracts. He built things like small bridges and gasworks, and even the iron framework for a synagogue, but large-scale projects were at least initially few and far between.
In October 1868, Gustav Eiffel started a partnership with another École Centrale alum to form the firm Gustav Eiffel & Compagnie. His partner, Théophile Seurig, was the junior partner, although he fronted a lot more money than Eiffel did. Their initial contract was for 5 years and was renewed when it expired.
And Eiffel continued to work really steadily throughout the end of the 1860s and basically established himself as the authority on iron bridge and railway construction. And during this time, he developed many of the standards in both design and construction processes that remained in place for decades. But he really wanted to move beyond primarily building bridges and start working on buildings.
But as he looked into expanding his skills into grander efforts, his actual work became more scarce. As the 1860s neared their end, there was unrest in France as Napoleon III was facing growing resentment after making a number of bad moves that left France without many allies in the period leading up to the Franco-Prussian War.
Yeah, that's the very, very, very quick and dirty version of that. For Eiffel, he was more concerned with his business and its health than he really seemed to be with politics, but he became a sergeant in the National Guard, and he sent Marguerite and their children away from Paris when things got a little bit dicey during the uprising. But mostly, he was just really irritated that he couldn't get to his work because parts of the city were closed off.
While the trouble in France was playing out, Eiffel sought out work outside of the country to try to keep his business afloat. He sent one of his associates to South America to work on deals there and continued to drum up projects in Europe and Northern Africa. The South American efforts were very successful, and Eiffel's firm was soon building railways and churches and government buildings.
Working abroad when his firm was responsible for the entire project start to finish, rather than serving as a consultant, came with its own challenges. So, for example, what would happen if something was wrong with the assembly once they got it on site? It was not feasible to expect a job to halt in Peru, for example, so that a part could be cast in France and then shipped over the Atlantic. So for those South American contracts, Gustav Eiffel would first build the structure at his ironworks in Levallois-Perret in the northwest section of Paris to make sure they were perfect. And then those structures would be taken apart and shipped in pieces to their final destination, where those pieces were reassembled.
But in 1873, this lucrative avenue of his business ended when his Latin American business manager, Monsieur Lelièvre, died. He had been the one man that Eiffel had really trusted to handle contracts overseas, and without him, he knew it was just not going to work.
Yeah, he felt like he could not possibly train someone up to be able to do the things that Lelièvre was doing. And also, he could not build up the level of trust that he had had with that man. So he thought it was better to just shutter that part of his business. And this is kind of a downer place to leave things, but we are going to end part one here so that we can keep some of his most famous efforts together in part two. And I also just kind of wanted to do it as like a juxtaposition, because once he gets into this second part of his life, it's all really like success, success, success. Whereas I wanted to kind of keep this one separate because it's a little bit of foundering and figuring things out that he was doing as a young man. And I like that.
Yeah.
That good old Gustave Eiffel.
Do you have some listener mail for us?
I do. One is from our listener, Tracy, who writes, "Dear Tracy and Holly, I'm a longtime listener who shares your love of postcards, so I thought I would send you one from Maui. So I'm just going to be honest right now. I read this because I'm selfish and I love Hawaii, and it made me think of tropical things when it's very cold outside." But Tracy goes on to say, "I adore your show. I learned so much and appreciate how accessible you make complicated historical stories." She also apparently likes the way I laugh, which I appreciate. Not everyone does. Thank you so much, Tracy. This is beautiful, and it makes me want to go to Hawaii as soon as possible. We also have another one from our listener, Stacy. I did not mean to do only rhyming people's names on our listener mail segment. Stacy writes, "Dear Tracy and Holly, greetings from the Antarctic Peninsula. My wife and I are on a 10-day excursion to Antarctica, and I have always wanted to send you a postcard, so here it is. I love your show, and I listen as I drive to and from work. Keep up the great work, Stacy." And it's a lovely picture from Antarctica, which I also feel a strange affinity for, because one of my dearest friends spent a significant amount of time there doing scientific research. So thank you to both Tracy and Stacy for sending us postcards. If you would like to write to us, that is easy as pie. You can do it at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also find us pretty much everywhere on social media as Missed in History. And you can go to our website, which is missedinhistory.com, and see every episode of the show that has ever existed, as well as show notes on any of the ones that Tracy and I have worked on together. And if you would like to subscribe to the podcast, that sounds great. You can do that on the iHeartRadio app, at Apple Podcasts, and pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.